With Upali, Part 2, translated by Bhikkhu Sajjato. With Uttiya. Then the wanderer Uttiya went up to the Buddha and exchanged greetings with him. When the greetings and polite conversation were over, he sat down to one side and said to the Buddha, "Worthy Gotama, is this right? The cosmos is eternal. This is the only truth. Anything else is futile."
"This has not been declared by me, Uttiya."
"Then is this right? The cosmos is not eternal. This is the only truth. Anything else is futile."
"This has not been declared by me, Uttiya."
"Then is this right? The cosmos is finite. The cosmos is infinite. The soul and the body are the same thing. The soul is one thing, the body another. A realized one still exists after death. A realized one no longer exists after death. A realized one both still exists and no longer exists after death. A realized one neither exists nor doesn't exist after death.
This is the only truth. Anything else is futile."
"This has not been declared by me, Uttiya." When asked about all these points, worthy Gotama says that they have not been declared by him. So what then has been declared by Mr. Gotama?
Uttiya,
I teach my disciples from my own insight in order to purify sentient beings, to get past sorrow and crying, to make an end of pain and sadness, to end the cycle of suffering, and to realize extinguishment. But when the worthy Gotama teaches in this way, is the whole world saved, or half, or a third? But when he said this, the Buddha kept silent. Then Venerable Ananda thought, the wanderer Uttiya must not get the harmful misconception. When the ascetic Gotama was asked this all-important question, he falters without answering. He just can't do it. That would be for his lasting harm and suffering. Then Ananda said to the wanderer Uttiya, well then, Reverend Uttiya, I shall give you a simile. For by means of a simile, some sensible people understand the meaning of what is said. Suppose there was a king's frontier citadel with fortified embankments, ramparts and arches and a single gate, and it has a gatekeeper who is astute, competent and clever. He keeps strangers out and lets known people in. As he walks around the patrol path, he doesn't see a hole or cleft in the wall, not even one big enough for a cat to slip out. He doesn't know how many creatures enter or leave the citadel, but he does know that whatever sizable creatures enter or leave the citadel, all of them do so via this gate. In the same way, it's not the realized one's concern whether the whole world is saved by this, or half, or a third. But when the realized one knows that whoever is saved from the world, whether in the past, the future, or the present, all have given up the five hindrances, corruptions of the heart that weaken wisdom, they have firmly established their mind in the four kinds of mindfulness meditation, and they have truly developed the seven awakening factors. That's how they're saved from the world, in the past, future, or present. Uttiya, you were just asking the Buddha the same question as before in a different way. That's why he didn't answer. With Kokanada. At one time, Venerable Ananda was staying near Rajagaha in the Hot Springs Monastery. Then Ananda rose at the crack of dawn and went to the hot springs to bathe. When he had bathed and emerged from the water, he stood in one robe, drying his limbs. The wanderer, Kokanada, also rose at the crack of dawn and went to the hot springs to bathe. He saw Ananda coming off in the distance and said to him, "Who's here, Reverend?"
"I'm a mendicant, Reverend."
"Of which mendicants?"
of the ascetics who follow the Sakyan. I'd like to ask the Venerable about a certain point, if you'd take the time to answer.
Ask, Reverend. When I've heard it, I'll know.
Is this your view? The cosmos is eternal. This is the only truth. Anything else is futile.
That's not my view, Reverend.
Then is this your view? The cosmos is not eternal. This is the only truth. Anything else is futile.
That's not my view, Reverend.
Then is this your view? The cosmos is finite. The cosmos is infinite. The soul and the body are one and the same. The soul is one thing, the body another. A realized one still exists after death. A realized one no longer exists after death. A realized one both still exists and no longer exists after death. A realized one neither exists nor doesn't exist after death. This is the only truth. Anything else is futile.
That's not my view, Reverend.
Then, sir, do you neither know nor see?
That's not so, Reverend. I do know and see.
When asked about all these points, you said that's not your view. Yet when asked whether you neither know nor see, you say, that's not so, Reverend. I do know and see. How then should we be seeing the meaning of this statement?
The cosmos is eternal. This is the only truth. Anything else is futile.
That's a misconception. The cosmos is not eternal. This is the only truth. Anything else is futile.
That's a misconception.
The cosmos is finite. The cosmos is infinite. The soul and the body are one and the same. The soul is one thing, the body another. A realized one still exists after death. A realized one no longer exists after death. A realized one both still exists and no longer exists after death. A realized one neither exists nor doesn't exist after death.
This is the only truth. Anything else is futile.
That's a misconception. I know and see the scope of convictions, the scope of grounds for views, fixation on views, obsession with views, the origin of views, and the uprooting of views. Knowing and seeing thus, why should I say, I neither know nor see? I do know and see. What is the Venerable's name, and how are you known among your spiritual companions?
Reverend, my name is Ananda, and that's how I'm known among my spiritual companions.
Goodness, I had no idea I was consulting such a great tutor as Venerable Ananda. If I had known who you were, I wouldn't have said so much. May Venerable Ananda please forgive me. Worthy of offerings dedicated to the gods. Mendicants, a mendicant with 10 qualities is worthy of offerings dedicated to the gods, worthy of hospitality, worthy of a religious donation, worthy of veneration with joined palms, and is the supreme field of merit for the world.
What 10?
It's when a mendicant is ethical, restrained in the monastic code, conducting themselves well, and resorting for alms in suitable places. Seeing danger in the slightest fault, they keep the rules they've undertaken. They're very learned, remembering and keeping what they've learned. These teachings are good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end, meaningful and well-phrased, describing a spiritual practice that's entirely full and pure. They are very learned in such teachings, remembering them, rehearsing them, mentally scrutinizing them, and penetrating them theoretically. They have good friends, companions, and associates. They have right view, possessing right perspective. They wield the many kinds of psychic power, multiplying themselves and becoming one again, materializing and dematerializing, going unobstructed through a wall, a rampart, or a mountain as if through space, diving in and out of the earth as if it were water, walking on water as if it were earth, flying cross-legged through the sky like a bird,
touching and stroking with the hand the sun and moon, so mighty and powerful. They control the body as far as the realm of divinity. With clairaudience that is purified and superhuman, they hear both kinds of sounds, human and heavenly, whether near or far. They understand the minds of other beings and individuals, having encompassed them with their own mind. They understand mind with greed as mind with greed, and mind without greed as mind without greed. They understand mind with hate, mind without hate, mind with delusion, mind without delusion, constricted mind, scattered mind, expansive mind, unexpansive mind, mind that is not supreme, mind that is supreme, mind immersed in samadhi, mind not immersed in samadhi, freed mind and unfreed mind. They recollect many kinds of past lives, that is, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 100, 1,000, 100,000 rebirths, many aeons of the world contracting, many aeons of the world expanding, many aeons of the world contracting and expanding. They remember, there I was named this, my clan was that, I looked like this, and that was my food. This was how I felt pleasure and pain, and that was how my life ended. When I passed away from that place, I was reborn somewhere else. There too I was named this, my clan was that, I looked like this, and that was my food. This was how I felt pleasure and pain, and that was how my life ended. When I passed away from that place, I was reborn here. Thus they recollect their many past lives with features and details. With clairvoyance that is purified and superhuman, they see sentient beings passing away and being reborn, inferior and superior, beautiful and ugly, in a good place or a bad place. They understand how sentient beings pass on according to their deeds. These dear beings did bad things by way of body, speech and mind. They denounced the noble ones. They had wrong view, and they chose to act out of that wrong view. When their body breaks up after death, they're reborn in a place of loss, a bad place, the underworld, hell. These dear beings, however, did good things by way of body, speech and mind. They never denounced the noble ones. They had right view, and they chose to act out of that right view. When their body breaks up after death, they're reborn in a good place, a heavenly realm. And so, with clairvoyance that is purified and superhuman, they see sentient beings passing away and being reborn, inferior and superior, beautiful and ugly, in a good place or a bad place. They understand how sentient beings pass on according to their deeds. They realize the undefiled freedom of heart and freedom by wisdom in this very life, and they live, having realized it with their own insight, due to the ending of defilements. A mendicant with these 10 qualities is worthy of offerings dedicated to the gods, worthy of hospitality, worthy of a religious donation, worthy of veneration with joined palms, and is the supreme field of merit for the world. A senior mendicant. Mendicants, a senior mendicant with 10 qualities lives comfortably in whatever region they live. What 10? They are long-standing and have long gone forth. They're ethical, restrained in the monastic code, conducting themselves well and resorting for alms in suitable places. Seeing danger in the slightest fault, they keep the rules they've undertaken. They're very learned, remembering and keeping what they've learned. These teachings are good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end, meaningful and well-phrased, describing a spiritual practice that's entirely full and pure. They are very learned in such teachings, remembering them, reinforcing them by recitation, mentally scrutinizing them, and penetrating them theoretically. Both monastic codes have been passed down to them in detail, well analysed, well mastered, well evaluated in both the rules and accompanying material. They're skilled in raising and settling disciplinary issues. They love the teachings and are a delight to converse with, being full of joy in the teaching and training. They're content with any kind of robes, alms food, lodgings, and medicines and supplies for the sick. They look impressive when going out and coming back, and are well restrained when sitting in an inhabited area. They get the four absorptions, blissful meditations in this life that belong to the higher mind, when they want, without trouble or difficulty. They realize the undefiled freedom of heart and freedom by wisdom in this very life, and they live, having realized it with their own insight, due to the ending of defilements. A senior mendicant with these 10 qualities lives comfortably in whatever region they live. With Upali. Then Venerable Upali went up to the Buddha, bowed, sat down to one side and said to him, "Sir, I wish to frequent remote lodgings in the wilderness and the forest."
"Upali, remote lodgings in the wilderness and the forest are challenging. It's hard to maintain seclusion and hard to find joy in it. Staying alone, the forests seem to rob the mind of a mendicant who isn't immersed in samadhi. If someone should say this, 'Though I don't have immersion, I'm going to frequent remote lodgings in the wilderness and the forest,' you can expect that they'll sink down or float away. Suppose there was a large lake, and along comes a bull elephant that's 3 or 3.5 meters tall. He'd think, 'Why don't I plunge into this lake and play around while washing my ears and back? When I've bathed and drunk, I'll emerge from the water and go wherever I want.' And that's just what he does. Why is that? Because his large incarnation finds a footing in the depths. Then along comes a rabbit or a cat. They think, 'What difference is there between me and a bull elephant? Why don't I plunge into this lake and play around while washing my ears and back? When I've bathed and drunk, I'll emerge from the water and go wherever I want.' They jump into the lake rashly, without thinking. You can expect that they'll sink down or float away. Why is that? Because their little incarnation finds no footing in the depths. If someone should say this, 'Though I don't have immersion, I'm going to frequent remote lodgings in the wilderness and the forest,' you can expect that they'll sink down or float away. Suppose there was a little baby boy playing in his own urine and feces. What do you think, Upali? Isn't that a totally foolish game?"
"Yes, sir."
"After some time that boy grows up and his faculties mature. He accordingly plays childish games, such as toy ploughs, tip-cat, somersaults, pinwheels, toy measures, toy carts, and toy bows. What do you think, Upali? Aren't such games better than what he did before?"
"Yes, sir."
"After some time that boy grows up and his faculties mature further. He accordingly amuses himself, supplied and provided with the 5 kinds of sensual stimulation, sights known by the eye, which are likeable, desirable, agreeable, pleasant, sensual and arousing, sounds known by the ear, smells known by the nose, tastes known by the tongue, touches known by the body, which are likeable, desirable, agreeable, pleasant, sensual, and arousing. What do you think, Upali? Aren't such games better than what he did before?"
"Yes, sir."
"Now in this regard, Upali, a realized one arises in the world, a perfected, a fully awakened Buddha, accomplished in knowledge and conduct, holy, knower of the world, supreme guide for those fit for training, teacher of gods and humans, awakened, blessed. He has realized with his own insight this world with its gods, maras, and divinities, this population with its ascetics and brahmins, gods and humans, and he makes it known to others. He proclaims a teaching that is good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end, meaningful and well phrased, and he reveals a spiritual practice that's entirely full and pure. A householder hears that teaching, or a householder's child, or someone reborn in a good family. They gain faith in the realized one and reflect, living in a house is cramped and dirty, but the life of one gone forth is wide open. It's not easy for someone living at home to lead the spiritual life, utterly full and pure, like a polished shell. Why don't I shave off my hair and beard, dress in ochre robes, and go forth from the lay life to homelessness? After some time, they give up a large or small fortune and a large or small family circle. They shave off hair and beard, dress in ochre robes, and go forth from the lay life to homelessness. Once they've gone forth, they take up the training and livelihood of the mendicants. They give up killing living creatures, renouncing the rod and the sword. They're scrupulous and kind, living full of sympathy for all living beings. They give up stealing. They take only what's given and expect only what's given. They keep themselves clean by not thieving. They give up unchastity. They are chaste, set apart, avoiding the vulgar act of sex. They give up lying. They speak the truth and stick to the truth. They're honest and dependable and don't trick the world with their words. They give up divisive speech. They don't repeat in one place what they heard in another so as to divide people against each other. Instead, they reconcile those who are divided and support those who are united, delighting in harmony, loving harmony, speaking words that promote harmony. They give up harsh speech. They speak in a way that's mellow, pleasing to the ear, lovely, going to the heart, polite, likeable, and agreeable to the people. They give up talking nonsense. Their words are timely, true, and meaningful, in line with the teaching and training. They say things at the right time which are valuable, reasonable, succinct, and beneficial. They refrain from injuring plants and seeds. They eat in one part of the day, abstaining from eating at night and food at the wrong time. They refrain from seeing shows of dancing, singing, and music. They refrain from attiring and adorning themselves with garlands, fragrance, and makeup. They refrain from high and luxurious beds. They refrain from receiving gold and currency, raw grains, raw meat, women and girls, male and female bondservants, goats and sheep, chickens and pigs, elephants, cows, horses and mares, and fields and land. They refrain from running errands and messages, buying and selling, falsifying weights, metals or measures, bribery, fraud, cheating and duplicity, mutilation, murder, abduction, banditry, plunder and violence. They're content with robes to look after the body and alms food to look after the belly. Wherever they go, they set out taking only these things. They're like a bird, wherever it flies. Wings are its only burden. In the same way, a mendicant is content with robes to look after the body and alms food to look after the belly. Wherever they go, they set out taking only these things. When they have this entire spectrum of noble ethics, they experience a blameless happiness inside themselves. When they see a sight with their eyes, they don't get caught up in the features and details. If the faculty of sight were left unrestrained, bad, unskillful qualities of covetousness and displeasure would become overwhelming. For this reason, they practice restraint, protecting the faculty of sight and achieving restraint over it. When they hear a sound with their ears, they don't get caught up in the features and details. If the faculty of hearing were left unrestrained, bad, unskillful qualities of covetousness and displeasure would become overwhelming. For this reason, they practice restraint, protecting the faculty of hearing and achieving restraint over it. When they smell an odour with their nose, they don't get caught up in the features and details. If the faculty of smell were left unrestrained, bad, unskillful qualities of covetousness and displeasure would become overwhelming. For this reason, they practice restraint, protecting the faculty of smell and achieving restraint over it. When they taste a flavour with their tongue, they don't get caught up in the features and details. If the faculty of taste were left unrestrained, bad, unskillful qualities of covetousness and displeasure would become overwhelming. For this reason, they practice restraint, protecting the faculty of taste and achieving restraint over it. When they feel a touch with their body, they don't get caught up in the features and details. If the faculty of touch were left unrestrained, bad, unskillful qualities of covetousness and displeasure would become overwhelming. For this reason, they practice restraint, protecting the faculty of touch and achieving restraint over it. When they know an idea with their mind, they don't get caught up in the features and details. If the faculty of mind were left unrestrained, bad, unskillful qualities of covetousness and displeasure would become overwhelming. For this reason, they practice restraint, protecting the faculty of mind and achieving its restraint. When they have this noble sense restraint, they experience an unsullied bliss inside themselves. They act with situational awareness when going out and coming back, when looking ahead and aside, when bending and extending the limbs, when bearing the outer robe, bowl and robes, when eating, drinking, chewing and tasting, when urinating and defecating, when walking, standing, sitting, sleeping, waking, speaking and keeping silent. When they have this entire spectrum of noble ethics, this noble sense restraint, and this noble mindfulness and situational awareness, they frequent a secluded lodging, a wilderness, the root of a tree, a hill, a ravine, a mountain cave, a charnel ground, a forest, the open air, a heap of straw. Gone to a wilderness, or to the root of a tree, or to an empty hut, they sit down cross-legged, set their body straight, and establish mindfulness in their presence. Giving up covetousness for the world, they meditate with the heart rid of covetousness, cleansing the mind of covetousness. Giving up ill will and malevolence, they meditate with a mind rid of ill will, full of sympathy for all living beings, cleansing the mind of ill will. Giving up dullness and drowsiness, they meditate with a mind rid of dullness and drowsiness, perceiving light, mindful and aware, cleansing the mind of dullness and drowsiness. Giving up restlessness and remorse, they meditate without restlessness, their mind peaceful inside, cleansing the mind of restlessness and remorse. Giving up doubt, they meditate, having gone beyond doubt, not undecided about skillful qualities, cleansing the mind of doubt. They give up these five hindrances, corruptions of the heart that weaken wisdom. Then, quite secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unskillful qualities, they enter and remain in the first absorption, which has the rapture and bliss born of seclusion, while placing the mind and keeping it connected. What do you think, Upali? Isn't this state better than what they had before? Yes, sir. When my disciples see this quality inside themselves, they frequent remote lodgings in the wilderness and the forest. But so far they haven't achieved their heart's goal. Furthermore, as the placing of the mind and keeping it connected are stilled, a mendicant enters and remains in the second absorption, which has the rapture and bliss born of immersion, with eternal clarity and mind at one, without placing the mind and keeping it connected. What do you think, Upali? Isn't this state better than what they had before? Yes, sir. When my disciples see this quality inside themselves, they frequent remote lodgings in the wilderness and the forest. But so far they haven't achieved their heart's goal. Furthermore, with a fading away of rapture, a mendicant enters and remains in the third absorption. They meditate with equanimity, mindful and aware, personally experiencing the bliss of which the noble ones declare,
Equanimous and mindful, one meditates in bliss. What do you think, Upali? Isn't this state better than what they had before?
Yes, sir.
When my disciples see this quality inside themselves, they frequent remote lodgings in the wilderness and the forest. But so far they haven't achieved their heart's goal. Furthermore, with the giving up of pleasure and pain, and the disappearance of former happiness and sadness, a mendicant enters and remains in the fourth absorption, without pleasure or pain, with pure equanimity and mindfulness. What do you think, Upali? Isn't this state better than what they had before?
Yes, sir.
When my disciples see this quality inside themselves, they frequent remote lodgings in the wilderness and forest. But so far they haven't achieved their heart's goal. Furthermore, going totally beyond perceptions of form, with the disappearance of perceptions of impingement, not focusing on perceptions of diversity, aware that space is infinite, a mendicant enters and remains in the dimension of infinite space. What do you think, Upali? Isn't this state better than what they had before?
Yes, sir.
When my disciples see this quality inside themselves, they frequent remote lodgings in the wilderness and the forest. But so far they haven't achieved their heart's goal. Furthermore, going totally beyond the dimension of infinite space, aware that consciousness is infinite, a mendicant enters and remains in the dimension of infinite consciousness. What do you think, Upali? Isn't this state better than what they had before?
Yes, sir.
When my disciples see this quality inside themselves, they frequent remote lodgings in the wilderness and the forest. But so far they haven't achieved their heart's goal. Going totally beyond the dimension of infinite consciousness, aware that there is nothing at all, they enter and remain in the dimension of nothingness. What do you think, Upali? Isn't this state better than what they had before?
Yes, sir.
When my disciples see this quality inside themselves, they frequent remote lodgings in the wilderness and the forest, but so far they haven't achieved their heart's goal. Going totally beyond the dimension of nothingness, aware that this is peaceful, this is sublime, they enter and remain in the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception. What do you think, Upali? Isn't this state better than what they had before?
Yes, sir.
When my disciples see this quality inside themselves, they frequent remote lodgings in the wilderness and the forest. But so far they haven't achieved their heart's goal. Furthermore, going totally beyond the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception, they enter and remain in the cessation of perception and feeling. And having seen with wisdom, their defilements come to an end. What do you think, Upali? Isn't this state better than what they had before?
Yes, sir.
When my disciples see this quality inside themselves, they frequent remote lodgings in the wilderness and the forest. And they have achieved their heart's goal. Come on, Upali, stay with the Sangha. If you stay with the Sangha, you'll be comfortable. Cannot. Mendicants, without giving up 10 things, you can't realize perfection.
What 10?
Greed, hate, delusion, anger, acrimony, disdain, contempt, jealousy, stinginess, and conceit. Without giving up these 10 things, you can't realize perfection. After giving up 10 things, you can realize perfection.
What 10?
Greed, hate, delusion, anger, acrimony, disdain, contempt, jealousy, stinginess, and conceit. After giving up these 10 things, you can realize perfection.